So we've been looking at leaders in the Bible to give us some perspective on our thoughts and our feelings on this upcoming election. And there are many takeaways from these messages, but some of the top shelf takeaways so far is that we need to pray. We need to pray about the election. We need to pray about our country. We need to pray that God will guide us as individuals in November 8th, that he will guide us and we'll be open to his leadership and his guidance as we make those choices. That needs to be a big deal. And I issued a challenge last week. How many of you guys prayed every time you came across something political? Okay, you tried. Okay, there's a few. Okay, there we go. I tried. Okay, because I know there were times and I'd pray over something. And I was like, oh man, I just missed like four or five opportunities. It was a crazy challenge. I had some people first service that were saying, you know, it was just. Dave Corman said that he learned the definition of praying continuously this past week. By trying to fulfill that challenge. And those of you guys who weren't here last week, the challenge was to, and I'll extend it this week. If you weren't here last week, go on and take this challenge this next week. And that is every time you see something, hear something, Facebook, Twitter, news, radio, friends talking, conversations at work about the election, about politics, take a moment and just say a couple sentences prayer about this election, about your decision, about God's wisdom, etc. And so it was really interesting. As Dave shared his story with me, I asked him for permission to be able to share it with you guys. He said that at work, about halfway through the week of doing this challenge, he had some of his work guys ask him. They said, Dave, you keep getting quiet on us. What's going on here? He said, and those of you guys who know Dave, he's not really quiet guy. And they said, you keep getting quiet on us. Is everything all right this week? And he said, yeah, well, and he described to him the challenge and what he was doing, that every time something was mentioned politically, that he was praying. And so it turned out, I thought that was really neat. That wasn't quite so much my goal. But it was neat that it turned into an opportunity to share his faith with his coworkers. So I thought that was pretty cool. So we need to pray. We need to keep our faith in God and not in people. Even if they are the president of the United States of America, God is still in power. He is still the one who is sovereign. God is in control, and he, as Christians, as God's people, he is our commander in chief, and we cannot lose focus of that. Now, we've accumulated a bit of a list to help us gain perspective as we look into the Bible, and we look at what the Bible defines as good qualities and bad qualities of a leader. And so we looked at some good qualities, being humble, yet courageous, charismatic, and tactful, honest, passionate about the message, not the messenger. So there's a different passionate there, not passionate about who they are, but what they want to do, what they're wanting to accomplish, passionate about the direction, not the director, not seeking selfish ambition, but looking for the greater good of the whole. Someone who's obedient and dependent on God, valuing God's law, and caring about God's people. We looked at some bad qualities of what we see in the Bible, some bad qualities of a leader, and that is pride, an egocentric personality, someone who's jealous, impatient, and disobedient to God's ways. And those are up online. You guys can review those, and that's just kind of a highlight of where we're at as we come into this message. In the first message, one of the notes in the bulletin that we had was that we cannot equate prosperity with good biblical leadership. And that week we were talking about Moses. And we were talking about Moses. He was a good leader, but he did not have much prosperity to show for it during his leadership over Israel. Today, we're looking at that same exact statement, but in the opposite way. The statement that you cannot equate prosperity with good biblical leadership. Because today, the leader we're looking at was a leader who was successful when it came to earthly prosperity, but he was not a good example of a good biblical leader, of a moral leader. And that's the third king of Israel, and that's King Solomon. We had King Saul, King David, we talked about last week, and today, King Solomon. Solomon was one of David's eight sons. And I forgot to mention last week, another one of David's shortcomings was that he was involved in polygamy, and that was never condoned in the Bible, even though there are some biblical characters that participated in that. That was never something that God condoned. So that was something that David was involved in. David had 8 of these sons, and he had them by 6 different wives. So that was just a lot of half siblings in their family there. So one of David's wives was from the famous story we talked about last week, and that was who? Bathsheba. And so that was one of his wives, and the baby that was conceived during David and Bathsheba's adultery event there, that baby died, but their second child was Solomon. And even though there was a lot of bad decisions and this layer after layer of sin involved in the Bathsheba incident, David did love her, and she was his favorite wife. And so there was no wonder that when David was picking someone to succeed him as king, that it was the son of his favorite wife. And so that's how Solomon became the ruler and the third king. Solomon ruled for 40 years, which is a long time. Before David died, he gave Solomon some great advice that would have saved the nation had Solomon held to it. Today we're going to be in 1 Kings. I'll let you go and know this on the back of your bulletins. Up at the top, we've got 1 Kings and we've got 2 Chronicles. Kings and Chronicles run parallel when it comes to the stories of Judah, the southern kingdom. And so today we're going to be focusing all of our scriptures in 1 Kings, but I want to encourage you, go and take a look at these 1 Kings 1 through 11, 2 Chronicles 1 through 9, and you get you a little bit of a different story from those, just different perspectives on things. So, but all of our scriptures today will be from 1 Kings, so if you want to go to your digital Bible or open a regular Bible to 1 Kings and follow along, you can. We'll have the scriptures up on the screen as well. So before David died, he gave Solomon this great advice, and if he held to it, he would have saved the nation. He said in 1 Kings chapter 2, "I'm about to go the way of the earth," he said. "So be strong, act like a man, and observe what the Lord your God requires. Walk in obedience to him and keep his decrees and commands, his laws and regulations as written in the law of Moses. Do this so that you may prosper in all you do and wherever you go." So Solomon's leadership, we're not going to have the fill in the blanks here at the top, but I want you to be able to have it, to be able to take it home, because it goes hand in hand with the notes section we'll be taking down below. But some of the positive things of Solomon's leadership. At the beginning of Solomon's rule, there were some initial struggles to establish that rule. But after those were dealt with, God appeared to Solomon at night in a dream, and he said, "Ask for whatever you want, and I will give it to you." Now, Solomon could have asked for just a number of different things. He could have asked for great wealth. Make me wealthy. He could have asked for great power. He could have asked for, profitable industry for the nation of Israel while he was the king, or a lucrative trade. He could have asked for a powerful military. He could have asked for fame, or he could have asked for lots of women, like, I don't know, 1,000, or a luxurious palace. He could have asked for any of those. But instead, Solomon humbly chose wisdom. He chose wisdom. We're told that the Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for this. So God said to him, "Since you have asked for this, and not for long life or wealth for yourself, nor have asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment and administering justice, I will do what you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart so there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be. Moreover, I will give you what you have not asked for, both wealth and honor, so that in your lifetime you will have no equal among kings. And if you walk in obedience to me and keep my decrees and commands as David your father did, I will give you a long life." So from Solomon we have wisdom. Lots of wisdom. In fact, in our Bible, we've got 5 books in the Old Testament that are typically called wisdom literature. And 3 of those 5, Solomon had a great deal in writing, a great part in writing those. And that's Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and the Song of Solomon. Solomon's wisdom brought prosperity both for the nation of Israel, and it brought personal prosperity to Solomon. His wisdom led to the increase of the effectiveness of the already existing military that David had started, and he just made it even better. And so that's another positive that came out of his leadership, was that he fortified Israel's territory and with a mighty military. He stationed military in different places. We would call that what? Home security, yes. We'd call that home security. David provided for them home security, a secure place to live, a place where they felt safe, where they knew that they were going to be well protected. He developed great foreign relations with the neighbors. We talk about that, don't we, in the midst of election stuff. We talk about security. That's a big concern of ours during this election. Is security, how secure are we going to be as a country? What's home security look like? What does the borders look like, et cetera, et cetera? We also are concerned with this foreign relations understanding. Solomon nailed it. He had great foreign relations. Early in his time as king, he married Pharaoh's daughter. So Egypt was down to the south. So immediately he made this connection between the families there with Pharaoh and Egypt. And a lot of things you can read about in those chapters at the top of your bulletin of the partnership that he had with Egypt and how that was very profitable for Solomon. Very wise move on his point, on his part. And then he also made great foreign relations with Tyre, which was the area above Israel. And so he actually became in debt to Hiram, the man up in Tyre. But still, very good relations with him. He championed trade and industry in Israel. Championed. That's just, I'm careful to use that word because it's a little bit of a buzzword lately, but here it really fits. He was amazing when it came to that. Used Israel as a trade route, amassed a fleet to be able to make sure trade was happening. And there was, his fleet would go out and 3 years later come back and just bring all sorts of stuff, gold and silver. And I think that's in the Second Chronicles. So when you're reading through Kings and you're like, well, I don't remember reading this. But in that list, the reason why I was going to say Second Chronicles, because it even includes that on these ships that came in, he received shipments of apes and baboons. So I guess he was into monkeys or primates, apes, baboons. So he had championed trade and industry in Israel. And one of his biggest accomplishments, according to the writers in the Bible, Kings and in Second Chronicles, they spent a lot of time talking about how he constructed the temple in Jerusalem, something that David had started the moves toward and Solomon finished it up. In 1 Kings chapters 5 and 6, they talk about building the temple. And the second half of 7, it talks about furnishing the temple. You really got to go and read some of those things. Later on today, take a gander through that. It's just amazing. Chapter 8, the final touches on the temple, bringing the ark in and the dedication of the temple. After the dedication of the temple, where Solomon himself prays at the dedication, God appears to Solomon again and says that he heard Solomon's prayer and that he will consecrate the temple. He says, as for you, and here we hear this again, okay? As for you, if you walk before me faithfully and with integrity of heart and uprightness, as David your father did, and do all I command and observe my decrees and laws, I will establish your royal throne over Israel forever, as I promised David your father when I said, you shall never fail to have a successor on the throne of Israel. But... if you or your descendants turn away from me and do not observe the commands and decrees I have given you and go off to serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel from the land I have given them and will reject this temple I have consecrated for my name. Israel will then become a byword and an object of ridicule among all peoples. This temple will become like a heap of rubble. All who pass by will be appalled and will scoff and say, why has the Lord done such a thing to this land and to this temple? People will answer, because they have forsaken the Lord their God, who brought their ancestors out of Egypt, and have embraced other gods, worshiping and serving them. That is why the Lord brought all of this disaster on them. Unfortunately, Solomon did not take this advice. Advice that was given by God himself to Solomon a couple of different times. Advice that Solomon's dad, David, gave to him right before he left the earth. And exactly the same thing that God was saying. David said, here's what you need to do. Then God comes along, follows it up, says, here's what you need to do. But he didn't. And so here's some negative things that came from his rule. The third negative is the real big one that corresponds here with his morality side of things. But a couple of the other things that he did that were negative. One was heavy taxation and forced labor. Second Chronicles calls that slave labor, but that the writer of Chronicles assures us that he didn't make slaves out of the Israelites. It was out of the other people that he brought into the country. So the Israelites were reserved for the more noble tasks. So he had a heavy taxation and forced labor, and that was to accomplish all of the positives that we just listed. So that was a difficult piece, but kind of a necessary, you know, success has a price. So another thing he did was he built an extravagant palace for himself. He did not neglect the temple in any way, but he definitely did not neglect his own palace either. And even constructed a palace for Pharaoh's daughter, his wife. Go read about that. We don't have time to get into all that. But that palace, the extravagant palace, it put a drain on the economy, even in the midst of all of the successful commerce that he had brought into Israel. Building that for himself was a big drain on that. And then here's big number three, a huge harem and welcomed their religious practices and beliefs. And this is where things went really bad for Solomon. When I said earlier he could have prayed for this and that, and the other thing he could have prayed for, you know, 1,000 women. Well, that's, some of you guys knew where that was coming from, and that was right here. In 1 Kings 11, it says he had 700 wives of royal birth. If you've never heard that before, that's got to be a what? 700. 300 concubines, and his wives led him astray. As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father had been. He followed Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. So Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did not follow the Lord completely as David his father had done. And we are told that this led many Israelites astray as he allowed all of these foreign beliefs and these foreign practices, these pagan gods, idol worship. It led many of the Israelites astray. And this is where you'll start writing down some notes. See, what Solomon did was he sacrificed the one thing of most importance in pursuit of world prosperities. He sacrificed the one thing of most importance in a pursuit of world prosperities. If we just boom real quick in a flash over to Luke chapter 10, we'll just change setting completely. In Luke chapter 10, a woman named Martha invites Jesus and his disciples to her house. Martha had a sister named Mary, and a lot of you are familiar with this story. Martha was running around making sure that she was being a good host, making sure that everything was taken care of, all the preparations were being made, and all the while she was running around, what was Mary doing? What? She was sitting at Jesus' feet. She was sitting right there at Jesus. And Mary finally, just, or Martha finally kind of has a breaking point. She says to Jesus, says, "Don't you care? Don't you care that I'm running around doing all of this, making sure that everything's all set and doing all this work myself? My sister hasn't even lifted a finger to help." Well, and Martha even says, "Tell her to get up and help me. Tell her to get up and help me." And here's what Jesus' answer is. He says, "You're worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed," or indeed, what are those two words? Say that with me. Only one. Only one. Few things are needed, or indeed only one. There's only one thing that's needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken from her. So let's write this down. Only one thing is needed. Only one thing is needed. In the famous Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is talking about how we worry about things, and we worry about all sorts of different things, and he brings a couple of main worries there. He talks about how we worry about what we're going to eat and drink, and Jesus said, "Look at the birds. They don't farm, do they? You don't see them on little John Deere tractors running around with little rakes in their wings, you know, or in their little foot trying to rake with one foot while balancing on the other, you know? You don't see them building little bird barns behind their bird houses." Jesus says, "Are you not more valuable than a bird to God?" He said, we worry about the clothes we wear. And he says, look at the flowers in the field. You don't see the flowers at little sewing machines, do you? Little thimbles under little leafy fingers. Little scissors cutting up fabric and sewing their garments together. He says, you don't see them sewing. And Jesus uses Solomon, the guy we're talking about today. He says, even Solomon in all of his splendor was not dressed like one of these. And he says, aren't you more valuable than the flowers to God? So Jesus says we shouldn't worry about these things, but instead we should reorder our priorities. And we should make sure that they're in check. And he says in that section, he says, but seek what? First. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. So let's write that down. Only one thing. Only one thing is to be what? First. See, Solomon eventually, and here's where we're coming back to Solomon. Solomon eventually comes to these same conclusions himself, but it's at the end of his life. This is recorded at the last two verses of the last chapter of the book of Ecclesiastes. Solomon writes, after all of his exploits, that only one thing really matters. Only one thing is needed. Only one thing should be first. He says, now all has been heard. After he's spent 11 and a half chapters talking about all of his exploits, he went after women, he went after wine, he went after wisdom, he went after wealth. And he said, now all that's been heard. He went after work and success through labor and toil. Now all has been heard, and here's the conclusion of the matter. So Solomon's like, here's what I've come up with. Here's the conclusion. It's really about one thing. Fear God and keep his commands, for this is the duty of all mankind. And I can just imagine from the passages we read today, thinking about the potency of this in Solomon's mind as he's writing this, hoping that we will listen as he did not. Here he is at the end of his life, looking back over a nation that's crumbling, and he has the assurance that it will. God said he was not going to rip it from his hands because of David and God's relationship with David, but as soon as he's done being in charge, the nation's going to be split into two. It's just going to be a mess. The nation never really recovers from that. And here's Solomon looking back and saying, you know what, if I would have done that one thing, if I'd have kept the first thing first, if I would have just focused on the one thing that was needed and not all these other things that I thought was important. Fear God and keep his commandments. This is the duty of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. So Solomon's conclusion, fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. Jesus, in Matthew chapter 16, he's quoted in talking about being disciples. And just one little sentence here that a lot of us are familiar with. We've heard it before. And Jesus says, what good will it be for someone to gain the whole world and yet forfeit their soul? Solomon is he's not a great example to follow, but he's a great example of this truth. He's an awful example to follow because of this truth. When you look at Solomon, he had it all, didn't he? I mean, anything you could ever wish for, anything that you could ever want or think that you would want, he had it. And he was successful in a worldly perspective. He had it. Jesus said, what good would it be to gain everything, the whole world, and yet lose that one thing that's most important? Solomon was that example. I don't know what kind of repentance happened through the book of Ecclesiastes and what happened after that, but as far as what he lost on earth because of his actions and behavior and decisions, it was massive because he did not keep the first thing first. He didn't keep that one thing that was needed as the one thing that he sought after. So let's reflect on this. How am I doing at keeping the most important thing my highest priority? As we look at Solomon, and we listen to Jesus, only one thing is needed. Only one thing is to be first. Only one thing matters. And that is our relationship with God. It's our relationship with God. To sit at his feet instead of worrying about and becoming so consumed with the distractions around us that we miss the one thing that is needed. To trust him with our life, to not worry about the things that we worry about, to not get distracted by all those worries, but to put first things first and to seek him and his kingdom first, his righteousness first, to fear him and keep his commandments. All of those, Solomon's perspective, Jesus's wisdom, all of that is really the one thing, and that is a relationship with God. So how am I doing at keeping the most important thing my highest priority? And it'd be easy to sit in here in church and say, well, yeah, I'm doing a pretty good job. I'm doing this, or I feel like I'm doing it. You know, a lot of times we go on feels, you know. I feel like. Well, go to some empirical evidence. Ask yourself, what are evidences of that in my life? What are evidences of that? Because the evidence won't lie. We will lie to ourselves, and that's we like to try and be cushy. It'll either be one way or the other. It'll be slanted one way. It'll be a doomsday, or we'll be, you know, overlooking things and with rose-colored glasses. But facts are facts, and evidence is evidence. So what evidence do you have in your life that you're keeping the most important thing your highest priority? I mean, when we look at Solomon and we see the destruction that happened to him, I believe in even the worst form of human nature that we see displayed, I still believe there's good there. We are created in God's image. And I don't think that any of us seek out and set out to completely ruin our life, to destroy our life, to become something awful down the road. I don't think any of us say, you know, in 20 years, I would like to just be financially ruined because of my choices. And I'm going to make a plan for that. And I'm going to work through that plan for the next 20. I don't think anybody plans for that. And they go that direction. I want to see if in 20 years, actually, I think I can do it in 15, 10. I think in 10 years, I can ruin my marriage. I don't think anybody actually sits down and says, this is what I want to do, and here's my plan. But how does it happen? It happens because we're not watching ourselves on the way there. We're not having self-check times where we stop and say, you know what? How am I doing here? Is the first thing first? Is the most important thing the most important thing? Is the thing, the one thing that is most needed, is that what's most needed in my life? Is my life centered around, and my conclusion on what is most important is to fear God and keep his commandments? We have to have self-checks on that. Otherwise, you do drift and you will move. Any of us have struggled with weight. That's not, you know, I have to look up here. That way no one thinks I'm singling them out. But, you know, it's not something where we set out and we say, you know what, I'd like to be 20, 30, 40, 50 pounds overweight in a couple of years. I don't think anyone sits and plans that out. But what happens? It's one slack day. It's a little extra ice cream here, and I'm guilty. It's a little extra something here. You know, portions that, you know, that might be enough, but man, that's better, you know. And that's how it happens. And we see that in the physical world, but in the spiritual world, we need to be even more aware of it. And so today is a great day as we look at Solomon's life to have a self-check time and say, how am I doing here? Am I keeping things first? Another reflection point here is, how important are these other things to me in this election? We've brushed on it. We've talked about this, that a lot of the major things that concern us in this election, you know, what kind of security is this candidate going to provide for us? Are they increasing or decreasing our military? Are they for or against gun rights? Are they going to open our borders or close our borders? What about our economy? What are they going to do? Are they going to increase our debt? Are they going to decrease our debt? What about Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid? What about government-provided health care? Are they for that? Are they against that? What are they going to do about that? What are they going to do to encourage the capitalist economy? Or are they going to try and encourage a different type of economy, move towards something more socialist in nature? What about our foreign relations? Where does that stand? You know, we go through all this, and we worry, and we're concerned about all this. And I tell you what, when you look at Solomon, he got an A+ in all of those things that we're concerned about. He got an A++++. Like Ralphie's teacher in his dream. A++. Christmas story. He had slave labor and higher taxes, but that's the cost of success sometimes at his level. But you look at what he did. He provided homeland security. I mean homeland security. He had garrisons stationed in major cities and fortified, and it was just, it was safe, and it was strong, and it was secure, A plus. He developed great foreign relations and had a great working relationship with foreign people, and we'd look at that and we'd say, okay, that's a plus there. Great political leader there. He championed trade and industry and just really turned it into, I mean, he was just making money hand over fist. Just everyone was bringing money to Solomon and bringing it into the kingdom. He was rich. The kingdom was rich. It was amazing. You look at him and say, man, he was really prosperous. He was really profitable. He was great for the country. Look at all the things he's doing. He even built an extravagant temple for God. Yet he was missing that one thing. That one thing that cost everything. And the nation crumbled. And it was split into two after his reign, and it struggled from that day forward, and it never recovered. Even to this day, Israel's not the nation that it was under King David and King Solomon. In any election, not just this one that we're looking at, the one thing that should matter the most to us as Christians is that candidate's relationship with God. I think we've gotten very distracted by all of these other things and how much they matter. The one thing, and I think this maybe would have made some changes if more Americans would have been thinking this way, Americans who call Christ Lord, would think our nation and the Christians in our nation, those that were voting earlier this year, I think if more were thinking about that person's relationship with God rather than security or financial plans or this and that and all these other things that Solomon nailed, I think we'd be in a different place right now. And so we need to think about that as we gain our view and our perspective for future elections and even how we view all the different officials that we'll be electing next month. Last little point of reflection here. How concerned am I about the moral state of our nation and what ramifications that may have for its future? Israel fell morally, and then they fell as a nation. Split into two, and we watch as each of those halves, the northern kingdom falls because of moral decline. The southern kingdom hangs on about 100 years longer. Then they fall after a period of moral decline. How concerned am I about the moral state of our nation? And then I want us to ask ourselves, what am I doing to help change this? And as you answer that, you need to see question number one under the reflections. How am I doing at keeping the most important thing my highest priority? That's how we're going to affect the circles around us. And Jesus talked about the guy with the plank in his eye. Remember that, you know? You were the guy with the plank in your eye. The guy with the speck in his eye. And you see a guy with a speck in his eye. How are you going to remove the speck in his eye if you've got a plank in your eye? Jesus' point there was not to avoid helping the guy with the speck. His point was, if you want to do that, and you should do that, and that should be a priority, you got to remove the plank from your own eye. Guys, if we want to make a difference in our country, we have to make sure that we have a self-check every once in a while. If I'm going to make a difference, I have to make sure my priorities are right. I have to make sure I'm living in a way that first is first, and that most important is most important, and that what is needed is what is truly needed in my life. And that, church, is how we're going to make a difference in our nation, in our country. And it starts with the simple little circles that we were talking about all through the summer series. Solomon, a king who had it all and yet missed that one thing.